Hello, my name is Jim, and welcome to the Weekly Electronic Podcast. This will be episode number 5, Counting Universes. Show notes for this episode can be found at papers.physicsfm.com/5. These will include papers, if you want to read the papers that I'm talking about today, as well as related episodes of Physics Frontiers. There are 2 off the top of my head that I think are related, and anything else that I come up with. What would I like to talk about today? I'd like to talk about A Measure of the Multiverse. It's a 2006 paper, I think, by Alexander Vilenkin. And this is a paper about figuring out how big the multiverse is. How many universes are there in the multiverse? And I'd like to talk about this because I think it's cool. Now, physicists have a different reason to talk about this. Physicists have a reason to talk about this in that they want to use the proportion of viable universes to determine what the probability is that we live in a world with the fundamental constants that we have. Fundamental constants like the fine structure constant, which would then derive things like, for example, the speed of light. And there are a couple of dozen of these constants that exist that are left over that need to be measured that we don't have a real theory for. But if, say, all of the universes that were possible in, say, string theory existed, then you could come up with a probabilistic argument why the universes are the way they are, or our universe has these particular constants. And that would eventually mean, or that would basically mean, that it's because there are a large number of universes, or at least a large possible number of universes, and we happen to be in this one, and these values, these fundamental constants, like the fine structure constant, 1 over 137, they're not constants, and in fact, in different universes, they'd be different numbers. And in some of those universes where they're different numbers, you and I could exist, beings that can observe the universe and find out whether or not these constants or this value or that value exist, or if nothing can actually observe them. So that's going to be a second part of this. String theorists, therefore, have a reason to look at how big is the universe itself, or the multiverse, how many universes in the multiverse, what is the likelihood that somebody would be in one of those. And string theory wasn't always in this business, right? So when I was in graduate school, nobody was talking about this. The Leonard Susskind, the Anthropic Landscape of String Theory paper was in 2003, 2002 maybe. I've got 2 different numbers on this paper, both for HEP theory. So I'm not sure why they're 2 different numbers, but they'd give me 2 different dates. Anyways, they weren't talking about that then. You know, when I was in graduate school, you know, there were 5 possible string theories, right? You know, type 1, type 2A, type 2B, HE, HO, that's it. But people got this idea that you could interpolate between those and you still end up with a viable string theory. And if that's true, and it seems to be true, it seems to be completely true, because at this point, as far as you have to be concerned, it's pure mathematics, right? If each one of these possible string theories is a possible string theory, then the various combinations of these 5 string theories make for another string theory. So you get a large number of string theories. When you have something like that, now all of a sudden, you're in a situation where you can use the anthropic principle, right? If you had only those 5 string theories, the anthropic principle doesn't really do you very much good. What do I mean that it doesn't do you very much good? I mean, if there are only those 5 string theories, then all of these constants, these couple of dozen constants that physicists are trying to determine why we have those particular values of the constants, they have to be whatever they are, because you've only got 5 of them. Then it's just a matter of experimentalists will do some experiments, or the cosmologists will do some, or the astronomers probably will do some telescopy. They'll do some telescopy and they'll figure out those things for you, and everything will be happy. So you're stuck with just those. But now if you have some sort of continuum, or maybe not even a continuum, it could be just, you know, a large number. This particular paper, a measure of the multiverse, says they're 10 to the 500. But if there are 10 to the 500 different possible combinations of those five basic string theories, then there are 10 to the 500 chances to get the values that we have in those 23 constants. So then it becomes a problem of probability, and you just have to figure out the probabilities. And so that's what people did. That's one of the things that the landscape is about. The landscape of string theory is really about what possible string theories are there. But then you add Anthropic in there. Siskind wrote the paper, The Anthropic Landscape of String Theory. Why do you add Anthropic? Well, because we exist. So we want to figure out the probability that something like us exists. And in turn, that's going to let us make estimates of what are the viable parameters, such as the fine structure constant that we can measure. So we're going to use the fact that we exist to figure things out about the universe. Now, I think this is originally due to Carter. I'm not completely sure. Brandon Carter from Large Number Coincidences and the Anthropic Principle in Cosmology. When is that? From 1974, according to this. But the big thing for the Anthropic Principle is Steven Weinberg used the Anthropic Principle to get a bound on the cosmological constant. That is, the cosmological constant, according to Weinberg, would be small, so that something like us could exist, but it would be just about as large as possible in the range where we could exist. And that worked. That's pretty close to what we have, this value, which is something like 0.7 times 10 to the minus 20 Planck length to the fourth power, whatever it is. So that's going to be something that we want to figure out, right? But to do all that, we need to figure out the probabilities of the universes. Then we need to count the universes to figure out the probabilities and things like that. So it's not a direct idea. Now, this is going to be kind of weird, kind of hard. So there are different ways we could count things, right? So if we look at the number of universes that should exist, then we have to look at these five eigenstring theories moduli, and you say, okay, these five guys create this continuum. So I checked, I wanted to make sure Suskind used the word continuum at least. So I'm going to pretend like this is a continuum made up of mixtures of these five string theories. So that's one set of possible string theories. The problem with those is they have some issues that don't exactly match with experiment. Most important one is they have a zero vacuum energy, right? They have no cosmological constant. On top of that, they have exact superparticle degeneracy, which I think is out, and they have these massive scalar particles that we don't see. So we have this continuum of theories, possible theories, but they don't include us, at least according to Suskind. There are, however, possibly, according to Suskind, as far as I know, it's still not proven that they exist as possible solutions in string theory, not exist physically, right? So at this point, all we care about is that you can make a string theory. Later on, we can try to figure out if the string theories exist, right? But right now, if you can make a string theory, we're in pretty good shape. And they can make string theories. But can you make a string theory where it's outside of that moduli space of supersymmetric vacua, I think is what Suskind was calling it. He had a catchier name, supermoduli space. So you have this supermoduli space here, and none of the solutions in there are any good. It turns out, however, if you go out of that region, you can get to places that have a positive cosmological constant, just like our universe. That is, the zero-point energy is not zero. And that's fine with us, right? There are some issues, but I think the most important problem with all of these small, off-centered places, all these solutions, these non-supersymmetric moduli islands. Well, I guess, you know, they're not known to exist as one. I think people have some solutions later. But the big problem that I'm seeing is that this scattering afterwards is probably no more than countable, right? It's probably no more than a small infinity. And that's going to give us some trouble. We've got a continuum, and then we've got some other set of possible universes. So there are two problems here. Okay, one is going to be, how do we count? So we want some subset of all of these universes. We want a subset of these universes that allows beings such as you, such as me, to exist. That subset is going to be larger or smaller, depending on how you count, based on how you order these things, right? So think about it this way. There are a couple of different ways to count how big the set of even numbers is. One way is to say, okay, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It seems that every even number is succeeded by an odd number, and every odd number is succeeded by an even number. And if you just count that way, what are you saying? You're going to say that there are half as many even numbers as there are integers or counting numbers. Fair enough. There's another way of counting. That would be to say, okay, well, for every even number, there's a counting number that's exactly half as large. So for every 2, there's a 1. For every 4, there's a 2. For every 6, there's a 3. So therefore, there are just as many even numbers as there are counting numbers. This is a little bit weird when you hear it at first, but that's the definition that mathematicians usually use for talking about the size of the sets of even numbers and counting numbers. Works the same for primes. There's no largest prime, so therefore, there are just as many primes as there are counting numbers, even though that set of primes, as you increase, becomes sparser and sparser in the set of integers, in the set of counting numbers. So we have two different ways to talk about the size of the set. We can say, what proportion of the members of one set are in the other set? Especially if you have a set like the even numbers that are a proper subset of the second set. They're a proper subset of the larger set. Or you can look at this one-to-one correspondence. Mathematicians usually like the latter. Sometimes people like the former. If you're looking for a probability, you are in a way looking for the former, right? You're saying what you want is you want to figure out if I have a hat full of an infinite number of counting numbers, one for each counting number, and I reach in and I pull out one particular counting number, what is the probability that it's even? That's what you're asking. So now we have a third problem here, which is we don't have to order the counting numbers in that same way. We could do something like 1, 2, 4, 3, 6, 8, right? And if we were able to order that, in that way, we basically end up with there are twice as many even numbers as odd numbers. So when you pull one of those numbers out of the hat, you have two chances in three that you end up with an even number. But that's something we can deal with when we come to it, if we come to it. How do we actually count these things up? Now, that does give us a problem, right? So if we want to look at these sets as probabilities over the larger number of things, we're going to have an issue. That issue is because the non-supersymmetric moduli that are way out of that moduli space of supersymmetric vacua that sit in the center and interpolate between the other string theories, because these ones on the outside are probably not continuous, that means that the chances of our universe being one of these valleys outside of the main crater of string theory are technically zero, right? So we have in the center an Aleph 1, a large infinity, a continuum of string theories, and on the outside we have an Aleph naught. Okay, this is interesting. So way back when I first read The Anthropic Landscape of String Theory for Physics Frontiers, we're talking about it with Randy, I did come across a paper by someone or a discussion by someone where somebody was arguing very hard that these should be a countable number of objects in the string theory landscape. But even to me, from at that point when I just read it and I hadn't been thinking about it, the description I heard from Susskind made it sound to me like it was Aleph 1, a continuum, rather than Aleph not. Aleph 1 is uncountable, right? It would be nice if it was Aleph 2, because then you'd have something that was Aleph 2 in size that made some sense. But I don't even understand Aleph 2. So, I understand Aleph not and Aleph 1. That's enough for me right now. So that's going to be a problem for me. That's going to be a problem for me when I talk about this stuff a little bit later. I would like to say that I also read maybe about a third. I read the sections that looked interesting to me. A paper by Akrami, Kalosh, Linda, and Vardanyan, The Landscape, the Swampland, and the Era of Precision Cosmology, which is a lot newer than these other two papers that came out in 2019, I think. And in this paper, it talks a lot about what's been done since then and a lot of the things that make the landscape seem unlikely in the Susskind paper have actually been fixed by string theorists, by researchers in the meantime. And a lot of the things that seemed unlikely in the anthropic landscape of string theory by Susskind have been fixed by string theory researchers. So we don't have to worry too much about that. There are interesting things in there. I don't want to get it too much into it because there are too many interesting things. So that is a good thing to look at, but a lot of the smaller problems that I might have with this seem to have been more or less fixed. Maybe not completely fixed, but they have some reasonable theoretical foundation for fixing these particular issues that I had earlier and may have mouthed off on in Physics Frontiers. I still sort of think a lot of this is unlikely, but I mean, I think it's worth talking about. So it seems to me you could look at things a couple of different ways, right? We have talked about different ways you could have multiverses in Physics Frontiers before. In A Measure of the Multiverse, and in the Linda paper as well, they were looking at the landscape of string theories as a multiverse in a way that I would think is reasonably good, right? Is reasonably coherent. And that way is to say that there exists a large space, and in that large space, you have multiple geneses. Yes, you have multiple geneses. You have multiple big bangs, basically. Occasionally, in this large space, a universe appears because of random fluctuations. And I'm not sure if he's the one who came up with this diagram, but it showed up in Quantum Physics, Mini Black Holes, and the Multiverse, which it may be where I found this paper to begin with. I'm not completely sure, but this conception seems to be pretty common. Now, thinking about it a little bit, maybe the Linda paper does not really seem to endorse that particular kind of universe. The Linda paper has a very similar diagram, but that diagram actually has a different point. But we have these universes in what seems to be an already extant spacetime. So that's going to be the second thing that's giving me pause with this, which is string theory is supposed to be useful because it gives you gravity, right? It gives you a quantum theory of gravity. One of the usefulnesses of a quantum theory of gravity is it gives you a theory of spacetime. What Vilenkin is about to do is he's going to start counting universes that were in something that may not be a space-time, but it seems to be acting a hell of a lot like one. Okay, so there's a thing that the universes are being created in, and they're being created in offset spots for different reasons. Okay, so in this case, you have a multiverse that is just different universes with different genesises based on the same string theory, or maybe not string theory, but string meta theory, I'm not sure what they're going to call it, string formulation, and each one will end up with different universal constants. Those different universal constants will tell you things like, can people exist in them? Can stars exist? Can planets have orbits around stars? All of these different things. They'll be answered by those variations in the universe's constants. So what Vilenkin's idea is that he can get this measure of sort of the number of these universes by doing cuts. Okay, so he's going to do cuts in this infinite region of space-time that may not be a space-time. And when he does those cuts, he's going to end up with numbers of different kinds of space-times. Some of them will be de Sitter spaces with positive cosmological constants like ours. Some of them will be anti-de Sitter spaces with negative cosmological constants. And those won't have people, probably, because they'll collapse right away. Some might have zero, but if they can have any cosmological constant, the probability of having a zero cosmological constant is zero. Unless there's some really good reason for them not to do that, like being the only viable alternative, which seems to be the case. What you want to do then is you want to figure out, well, what's the probability that I have different kinds of pocket universes? Or what's the possibility that I could have different universes, right? So I can have this universe, that universe, the other universe. The answer to that is, well, you just do one of these cuts and you can sort of figure it out, right? You say, okay, well, how many will this be? How many will that be? What are the randomnesses for that? Since you probably have some idea about the kind of distribution, probably just a uniform distribution on various things. I don't see any good reason to have a Boltzmann distribution or something like that, even though those are much more fun. So you take one of these cuts, and you have sort of a prior probability for what's going on. You have the different kinds of universes. Now, we have a problem, which is we're in a particular kind of those universes, which is one with a positive cosmological constant that can exist long enough to support life, and if it does exist long enough, it does support life, right? So when we're looking at what we see, it's a different idea from what we don't see. So that's really basically the idea here. So he's taking the idea with these pocket universes on how to count in the way where we throw all of the numbers in a hat, all the counting numbers in a hat, and we pull out a bunch of them. When we do that, we get so many evens and we get so many odds. And that's just the probabilities. So these do not include every single possible string theory or even single copies of every single possible string theory. Some of them might have double copies, except that you have a continuum area, which basically tells you you'll never get a double copy exactly. That's the main idea about how he gets that out of there. But there are some problems. There remain some problems. And all of these guys, in Vilenkin, in Susskind, in Linda, you have these universes, and I didn't mention one bad thing about these positive cosmological constant universes, these de Sitter universes, at least in string theory. So a string theoretical de Sitter universe is unstable. So a metastable universe is one that has a potential that is not a universal minimum. And in not having that universal minimum, there's a probability, and there's an energy barrier, but there's still a probability that that universe will tunnel into a lower energy universe. It will become a lower energy universe. Why is that a problem? Well, that's a problem because that means at some point, our universe, according to sort of the string theory stuff, will become one of the other universes, will move into another universe, will change into another universe. And unfortunately, the universe that it's going to most want to change into is one of these universes at the center in this string theory crater. And those are the ones where you and I can't exist. So all of these universes in the string theory landscape that have people in them, that have conscious beings in them that can measure the universe, are slowly moving towards the center, right? They're moving towards a universe with perfect supersymmetry. where the world is exactly the way the string theorists like it, but human beings can't exist. Things that observe the universe can't exist. They're on some sort of path, some sort of random walk among these isolated string theories. They keep moving down towards the real string theoretical universe. And that, in one of these papers, was even expounded on as the origin of our universe. Our universe didn't come from nothing. There was a previous universe that was even less stable than our universe, and on its way to getting to that bottom set of universes, it turned into us for a while. But eventually, it's going to decay into a better place. Now, once it gets to that better place, it doesn't even have to stay put. Once it gets to that better place, all of the energies are the same. So not only is that region a continuum, there's no reason why any particular string theory in that region of string theories will stay in one spot. Very strange things could happen in that large center, as far as, you know, the evolution of the constants of nature. Even in that middle ground, even if interesting things can happen, interesting things meaning things that someone could actually observe, you just move around a lot and the things that we're observing would stop existing. Lots of bad stuff there. I prefer a measure of the multiverse more like the second measure, right? Where you'd be measuring, well, what are the total number of possibilities, right? And then you just go on from there. Now, that's a little bit different. And I don't like the metaphysics of that as much, right? I like the metaphysics of this Vilenkin paper as far as we have this region that we have things existing in, and maybe it's an infinite region, maybe it's infinite in four dimensions. That's fine, right? But, you know, things come into existence and, you know, some of them pop out of existence and some of them expand until there's hardly anything left. They're just little pockets of energy here and there. That sort of idea is probably the most, maybe the second most interesting idea about universes, or the most viable. The most viable is there's one universe and it just collapses. There's one universe that collapses every once in a while, and when it collapses, it then goes back and reforms. And in that case, in this particular model, the constants of nature would, you know, re-roll every time there was a big bang. That's probably the least weirdest one. But that doesn't work if you have a de Sitter space, right? If you have a de Sitter space, then the world is going to expand forever and you're stuck with it. Like I said, I like that particular aspect. I don't like a couple of things about this. I don't like the cutting. I'm not completely sure how you get a real number out of that. And even Vilenkin seems to have been honest in saying, you know, depending on how you draw this surface through the universe, you get different numbers, different places, different angles, whatever. You get different numbers of different kinds of universe if you draw this line through the multiverse. And I didn't like the fact that it was in that, because there's no discussion about what this big multiverse area is really, right? There should be some idea about what it is. Because, again, you don't have space-time until you have quantum gravity, and you don't have quantum gravity in string theory until you have a low enough energy to have the quantum gravity. So what is this cut being made in anyway? I don't get that. I prefer the more rational counting. So that's the question I really have. When I think about counting universes, I think of counting the possible universes, and that would be more like what I said previously, is when you do that one-to-one matching. That might be, you might have something like here in Vilenkin, where you have a smaller number of actual universes, right? If each universe has a discrete event that creates it, then the number of universes has to be smaller than the number of possible universes, because the number of possible universes has this continuum in it. And so there are infinitely many more, infinitely times more universes in the string theory landscape than there are instances of string theories. But again, this bothers me because then you have a measure zero size of places that you and I could possibly live, which means that we don't exist. And I guess that's what we found out today, is that according to the string theorists, according to Vilenkin, Linda, Kami, Varadyan, Kalosh, and Susskind, you and I don't exist. They have mathematically proved it. String theory, they tell us, is the only option. String theory tells us there is a countable number of possible universes that you and I could exist in, something like a human being could exist in. There is a core number of string theories that is continuous, is a continuum, is an uncountable infinity of string theories. On top of that, there are only a countable number of instances of string theories. No more than a countable number, a countably infinite number of instances of string theories, of universes. And because of that, there is a zero probability that human beings or anything that could observe the universe exists. So, you are not listening to this podcast. You have just listened to the Weekly Electronic Paper, Episode 5, Counting Universes. Show notes for this episode can be found at papers.physicsfm.com/5. Show notes will include the papers I read for this podcast, as well as related episodes of Physics Frontiers and a link to Quantum Physics, Mini Black Holes, and the Multiverse, which is a very nice book by Nomura, Poirier, and Turning in the Multiversal Journeys series from Springer. Thank you very much for listening.